morning and welcome to New Mexico People, Places, and Ideas. I'm Stephen Spitz. On today's show, up to 80% of New Mexico's prisoners are substance abusers. Is one way to reduce crime to treat those addictions? We'll ask UNM Professor Noah Painter Davis, who is presently studying such treatments in New Mexico. Noah Painter Davis, welcome to the program.
Hello, Stephen.
I want to spend most of our show on how substance abuse treatments could both help offenders and reduce crime. But to understand that, we have to understand a bit about those treatments. In preparing for the show, I was really surprised at how much they've evolved and how much they've been studied. So what are the basics of those plans?
Well, about 30 years ago, there was the feeling within the criminal justice system that in terms of treatment, nothing works. That was the broad sentiment among researchers and policymakers. Today, we know that that is false, that substance treatment can work. And the gold standard has evolved to be medication-assisted treatment coupled with counseling, including cognitive behavioral therapy, motivational interviewing. And the core component of these medication-assisted treatments includes the use of drugs such as methadone, naltrexone, or buprenorphine.
And for alcohol addiction, is it similar? Is it also medically assisted treatment plus drugs?
I'm not as well versed on treatments for alcohol, but I do know that medication is often used and other medication-assisted treatments are used for alcohol addiction.
So when you're talking about medically assisted treatment, including methadone and naltrexone, I mean, people used to argue you're just substituting one addiction for another, so therefore it really wasn't a good proposal. But I guess from what you're saying, these programs have been studied, and that's simply not the case. That's the way to actually treat substance abuse.
Yes, it's considered the gold standard, and the National Institute of Health is funding a lot of research to try to increase the acceptability across organizations of using medication-assisted treatments. A lot of organizations have been hesitant to do it, in large part because of what you said, that it's the feeling that it's just substituting one drug for another drug problem. But because it's been shown to work, there's a big push to get organizations to start using these medication-assisted treatments.
So essentially, the stigma still needs to be overcome of using any drug to treat a drug addiction.
Yes, stigma is one of the main barriers individuals face when trying to get on the road to recovery, stigma in society related to substance use disorder.
Let's talk specifically then about treatment for substance abuse for justice-involved individuals. And justice-involved individuals means people that have at least been arrested, correct?
Yes, justice involved is a term to refer to anybody who's experienced contact with the criminal justice system as a quote-unquote an offender.
One point of it is to reduce substance abuse, but the more basic question the society's interested in is, can we reduce crime by treating these substance abuses, correct?
Yes, so you opened the show with a statistic, and I'm not sure, maybe you got it from me, but research has shown that around 80% of inmates are substance involved. And what this means is that they either have a substance use disorder, they committed a crime related to drug or alcohol, or they committed a crime to get funds for substances. And so there's a huge intersection between substance use, crime, and incarceration.
So the way I think of this is there are three possible times when intervention could happen in the criminal process in order to have substance abuse treatment. The first time would be after arrest and prior to incarceration. The second time would be actually in prison. And the third time would be upon reentry into society, leaving prison. So what I'd like to do with you is discuss those three times separately. And starting with after arrest, but pre-incarceration, that there are, as I understand it anyway, two different possible interventions. One is a drug court, and one is a diversion program. And why don't we start with diversion programs? Are there such things in New Mexico now?
So the concept of diversion is very broad. A lot of people like to think of diversion as anything but incarceration. I like to think of diversion as existing along a continuum. And people can be diverted from the system at many points throughout the criminal justice process. I like to think of diversion as reducing exposure to formal criminal justice contact. And one of the most often times people experience, there's a huge increase these days in front-end diversion practices. So for instance, in Santa Fe, there is the Law Enforcement Assisted Diversion Program. And this happens at arrest, where instead of being formally processed, a person is linked to services and resources.
I see. So they're not even arrested.
I think different lead programs may have different policies, but I believe they're not arrested at all. And the point is you want to try to avoid exposure to the criminal justice system and instead address the underlying root causes of the criminal behavior, which in most cases is substance use.
So this may sound obvious, but what's the point of avoiding the criminal justice system?
The criminal justice system has a variety of collateral consequences for individuals. One that comes to mind is the general stigma of having a criminal record. That can cause difficulties in applying for employment, for getting into different education programs, for different housing. You want to avoid the criminal record as much as possible. Other consequences of criminal justice contact include health consequences. If you're incarcerated, that does a lot of harm to your health, from your mental health to your physical health. So avoiding as much criminal justice contact as possible is beneficial.
So you've mentioned one diversion program by the Santa Fe District Attorney, I think you said. Are there other diversion programs in New Mexico besides that?
There's tons of different types of diversion throughout the country and in New Mexico in particular. I'll just talk about a few. You have the Law Enforcement Assisted Diversion Program, which happens prior to arrest. In New Mexico, there's a variety of pre-prosecution diversion programs. And when we talk about pre-prosecution diversion programs, we're talking about programs that happen before a prosecutor files a charge.
So that's after arrest, but prior to a charge?
After arrest, but prior to a charge.
Okay.
And these front-end diversion programs, they replace formal criminal justice processing with a range of activities. They can include community service, engaging in treatment, and educational programs. To provide some context here, I'm actually working with the First District Attorney's Office right now to design a diversion program for juveniles and young adults. And as part of the process of creating the diversion program, we're studying best practices throughout the country. And we haven't really gotten to assessing the key components of programs already in place in the state. We're kind of starting from a broader picture and trying to get best practices through looking throughout the country.
So, all right. So looking at best practices throughout the country, what are you seeing in terms of diversion programs?
What we're seeing is that the main things for diversion programs to be effective is that they must have three main components. They must be focused, they must be balanced, and they must be fair. And I'll talk about each in turn. For diversion programs, the principle of focus has to do with the fact that you want to calibrate interventions to the risks and needs of specific individuals. And you want to do that in ways that take into account their learning styles and their abilities. So when we think about substance use, we want to have interventions that address those who are at high risk of using substances, and we want to link them to interventions that address those issues.
I have a question on that, but let me just mention before I do that, that this is New Mexico People, Places, and Ideas. My name is Stephen Spitz, and I'm very pleased to be talking with UNM sociology professor Noah Pena-Davis about diversion programs. And you were saying, Noah, that the focus has to be, I guess, to some extent on high-risk people. But it seems to me, if from a prosecutor or if it's a police doing the diversion, I mean, that's the biggest risk. Like, that would be the, in terms of risk to the prosecutor's office or to how police are viewed by the public, the biggest risk is you divert somebody who's high risk and then they go out and commit another crime. Mm-hmm. And so maybe it has the biggest upside, but it also has a big downside to that institution.
Yeah, well, I think we need to be clear when I'm talking about risk. It's not necessarily risk of somebody coming out of committing a violent crime or a heinous crime. It's risk of somebody having a high risk of reoffending,
okay,
any type of reoffending. And they could score as high risk of engaging in substance use related crimes again in the future. So we need to conceptualize risk in a different way. It's not just about violence or crimes involving bodily injury.
But it includes that, correct?
It can include that.
Yes.
So a lot of violent offenders actually have substance use issues. So most diversion programs do not include violent offenders. It's usually for individuals with substance-related crimes or property crimes, low-level crimes.
Okay. Is that considered a best practice to function in that way?
It is actually not considered a best practice. I think a major problem with diversion programs is that they tend to focus on actually individuals at very low risk of reoffending, minor offenses, and first-time offenders. And to me, that is problematic. Those cases, a lot of times, should just be dismissed, not brought into the system at all. Individuals who have a low risk of reoffending in the future, they should be held accountable in some way, but not brought into the system. When you bring somebody into the system who's at low risk, you often do more harm than good. Diversion programs should focus more on those at a higher risk. And what I mean by those at higher risk, it could be somebody who needs services. They need linkages. They need support. And so diversion programs should involve the linkage of individuals to the services that they need.
So would you include at higher risk anyone with a substance use disorder?
It would also depend on other factors, including the crime they committed. Some individuals need to be stabilized. So I don't think we're at the point where we would recommend diversion for individuals with violent offenses. We need to do more work on that. I would recommend with individuals with substance use issues, as an underlying driver of their criminal behavior, they need to be linked to services, including medication-assisted treatment where it is appropriate.
By linked, you mean just referred to outpatient treatment? Or does the prosecutor or police somehow keep track and make sure that they're participating in these programs?
I can't speak much from the police's perspective. I can tell from my discussions with the prosecutor's office that a major problem that they have is that they don't have the cross-agency collaborations to know the available resources within the community. And often this leads to more punitive approaches because there's not a recognition of the different services in the community that a person could be linked to. So one part of this project is really going to be surveying the resources that are available in the first district, which includes the counties of Santa Fe, Los Alamos, and Rio Arriba, and working to establish relationships with the service providers in these communities, and then working to identify clients' needs and to link them to the services that help address those needs.
You know, it's interesting because I recently interviewed APD's chief of police, Medina, and he basically said the same thing. They would like to divert more people, but they don't know where to send them. They lack the linkages.
Yes. Yeah, so a lot of my work right now is turning towards trying to explore how to strengthen those linkages between criminal justice agencies and service providers. I think a lot of the problems with the criminal justice system stem from a lack of cross-agency collaborations and information sharing.
So I stopped you on focus, and you mentioned two other requirements that ought to be present in diversion programs.
A big one for diversion programs is, the second one is balance. And what this means is placing a relatively equal emphasis on prevention and rehabilitation with enforcement and accountability. So in the history of the criminal justice system, there has been a heavy, heavy, heavy reliance on punishment, on enforcement. And that has not been balanced at all with a focus on prevention and rehabilitation. And research shows that rewards and support are at least as important as punishment for effectively decreasing reoffending.
I mean, that's true not just for diversion, but throughout the whole system, correct?
Throughout the whole system, there needs to be a greater emphasis on balancing the enforcement with rehabilitation and services.
And the third item?
The third is fairness. And fairness involves treating individuals and the communities they live in justly. And a big component of legitimacy is procedural justice, which involves working to ensure that the system's processes are fair. And a key insight from work on procedural justice is that legitimacy largely depends on the individual's perception of whether the system is fair.
Everything you've just said that should apply to diversion seems to me to should also apply to prison programs, particularly prison programs for substance users, because as far as I've been able to determine, those programs in New Mexico are practically non-existent. According to a recent LFC report, all we have is a pilot program. Now, you may have more recent information than that, because my information is about a year old, but do you know of any programs beyond pilot programs in New Mexico prisons for substance use treatment?
I'm not well-versed on the specific programming within the prisons. I am aware that we are one of the only states that does not provide medication-assisted treatments to prisoners. I know of the pilot study you reference where they will be piloting the use of, I believe, Vivitrol in a few of the prisons throughout the state. But yes, all these components, the balance, the focus, and the fairness, I think they should be implemented throughout the criminal justice process. My research on prisons, which is really just getting started through something called the Justice Community Opioid Innovation Network, is really about the re-entry process. What happens after a person is released from prison?
Okay, so let's move then to the reentry process. And let me mention, while we do, is that this is New Mexico, People, Places, and Ideas. My name is Stephen Spitz, and I'm very pleased to be speaking with Professor Noah Painter Davis. He is looking into substance abuse treatment programs, diversion programs, and reentry programs here in New Mexico. It seems to me that reentry programs are a no-brainer. Because if you've got someone with a substance use disorder that's already been in prison, and now that person's going to come out and face all the difficulties about reentering society, plus he has a substance abuse disorder, and plus he's already been a criminal offender, I mean, that person is in huge danger of reoffending. So it seems to me like society ought to say, let's put a lot of resources into this. So in general, how prominent are reentry programs in the United States?
You know, there's a lot of efforts put into reentry, but I'll just talk about some of the hardships and problems with reentry and how reentry can be improved.
Mm-hmm.
So as you mentioned, reentry is a tough process for any person leaving prison. They face a number of barriers. Often difficult finding a job, difficult finding housing. And if these problems are compounded, if someone's also dealing with a substance use issue, a large percentage of inmates who are releasing to the community have or are at risk for opioid use disorder or other forms of substance involvement. And substance involvement greatly increases the likelihood of recidivism. It greatly increases the likelihood that somebody will abscond from parole, which means they will leave their parole term. And it greatly increases the odds of death. And an ideal reentry program would help somebody who has substance use disorder along something called the cascade of care. The cascade of care, and I'll just, it's good, better to show a diagram, but I'll just speak about it. It's when services for an individual, the need for services, are identified by an initial screening, and the next stages of the cascade unfold whether they are needed and appropriate. So if somebody screens positive for a substance use disorder, they would then receive a more comprehensive assessment. They would then have a treatment plan created. They would be referred to treatment. They would be initiated into treatment. They would engage in treatment, and they would stay retained in treatment. Research shows that a person who receives a full cascade of care is much less likely to recidivate and much less likely to die. However, people rarely, very rarely, receive a cascade of care. There are huge gaps across the cascade of care, and those gaps are a primary cause why people recidivate.
So where are the gaps? I mean, these are expensive. These are resource-intensive programs, correct?
They are resource-intensive programs, and there's gaps along every step of the cascade of care. And we don't really know the specific gaps in New Mexico, and that is a major problem. That information is generally not collected by criminal justice agencies. I know that the Department of Corrections is taking a huge initiative to improve their data system, but that'll take time to improve. So what we're going to be doing in New Mexico is linking information on inmates who are releasing from prison to Medicaid records, which can give us insights into how they are doing along the cascade of care.
One thing I saw when I was preparing for the program was that, you know, among the general population, not talking about criminal offenders, the relapse rate is something like 40 to 60%. So I would think that justice-involved individuals who have all the same problems as the general population, plus more, you're talking about a much higher relapse rate and therefore a pretty high recidivism rate, just if everything worked perfectly.
Yeah, one of the main drivers of readmission to prison are substance use violations or technical violations related to substance use that cause a person to have their parole status revoked. And there are ways to reduce recidivism. And one of the best ways to reduce recidivism is to improve linkages between probation and parole offices and service providers to better provide this cascade of care. And there is a movement among probation and parole to link to service providers who provide medication-assisted treatment. And our hypothesis is that if we can link more people to services that provide medication-assisted treatment, we will see recidivism decrease.
So at the top of the show, I said I was going to ask you whether substance abuse treatments for, you know, criminal offenders can help reduce crime. And it actually was raised by Police Chief Medina, who believes that firmly, but couldn't find treatment programs. But when I looked at the data, to tell you the truth, it wasn't clear to me at all whether there was crime reduction among people receiving treatment, or if there was crime reduction, how significant it was. So when you look at the data, what do you see?
We are working with data in New Mexico to look at some of these dynamics. National gold standard research out there these days shows that substance use treatment decreases recidivism, which means it can decrease crime. Medication-assisted treatment can decrease crime.
And when I saw like results like that, they were, I mean, some of them could be minimal or moderate, like a reduced arrest or the studies were only for a very limited period, things like that, that made me hesitant to draw a major conclusion. But you're saying the research is there.
The research is there, and it will be emerging more in the coming years. There has been a growing use of medication-assisted treatment, and there has been a growing expansion of Medicaid. And that is really going to be an opportunity to better link people to services, Medicaid coverage.
So why are we so late to the party? I mean, the opioid crisis has been with us for more than a decade, right? We know that substance abuse leads to crime in some way, and we know that people involved with crime who have substance abuse need treatment if they're going to avoid further crime. So why is it that this is just emerging now? Why hasn't this been done before?
Well, I'll approach that in two ways. There was a general perception throughout the 70s, 80s, 90s, and even early 2000s that nothing really worked in terms of reducing crime and substance use. And substance use has generally been criminalized. It's been seen more as a criminal problem as opposed to a public health problem. And these views and the institutions that hold them can be hard to change. There's a large amount of institutional stasis, and that is starting to change as there's a growing recognition that criminal justice system practices over the past 30 years have not worked. So people are coming to that realization. They're becoming more open to trying new things. And medication-assisted treatments are besides methadone, are relatively new and relatively under-researched. So as the evidence base is increasing, there is also a greater acceptance of criminal justice institutions for using evidence-based practices, and medication-assisted treatment is one of them. And I'm really hopeful that over the next 10 years, we're going to see criminal justice agencies relying more on these evidence-based practices and taking a more public health approach to individuals with substance use problems as opposed to a criminal approach.
Yeah, it seems to go back to something you said earlier about diversion programs, that they need to be less punishment-focused and more rehabilitative. But I mean, that's certainly, I mean, no one would describe our prison system that way at the moment. It's still very punishment focused, correct?
Correct. Yeah. I will say that the New Mexico Department of Corrections has some great leadership in taking new initiatives and new approaches towards reentry. And I think we're going to see some major changes over the next 10 years.
We are going to have to leave it there. I would like to thank today's guest, UNM Professor Noah Painter Davis.
Thank you, Stephen.
Thanks also to my producer, Roman Garcia. The executive producer of this show is Lynn Shebeki. My name is Stephen Spitz, and you've been listening to New Mexico People, Places, and Ideas on KUNM. Podcasts of the show are available wherever you get podcasts. Archives of past shows are at stephenspitz.com. Thanks for listening. See you next time.